services, Lavazzi at boom1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 210. I'm Adam, and here's Mr. Werp. Robert.
All together now, with rings on their fingers and bells on their toes.
Yes, that was Robert Haynes. His new album is due out next month. Here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Would you mind not calling me Pop?
Matthew Kressel.
Haven't you any anesthetic?
Need it. And Mary Lang.
Get me away from the Last Chance Saloon.
Yes.
Was that in the dialogue? I don't remember that.
No, that's from me.
Yes, okay. Okay. Wonders upon all wonder. This week we've got to look at gunfighters. The only thing I have connected with gunfighters, as I said last week, when I was born, this story was, we were in the middle of it actually when I was born. So this is my birth story.
You remember it then?
This was, by the way, this one.
That's ranks a bit of a silly question, but never mind.
Number 175 on the Mighty 200.
Okay, well, I'm not going to talk about what I think about it just yet, because even though it's fairly obvious. So let's get on with it.
<I suppose. laughs>
Yes, I don't know whose idea this was, but never mind.
It was the randomizer's idea.
Yeah, right.
No,
yeah.
I did not vote for this one, I want you to know, but you guys outvoted me.
Yeah. I can't remember if
I think it was the selection. The randomizer picked like three or four bad ones in this slot, and it was like, which of these is the worst of all of these, or the least worst of all these?
I think I might have voted it under duress.
I think we did pick the worst.
I'll be putting a new list of randomizer stories up probably in the next couple of days because we're running out.
Oh, it's a bit light.
Yeah, and they'll end up being the Sensorites or something and the Web Planet, knowing you. Anyway, moving on.
Use a random number generator.
Yeah, so do I, but I didn't manage to avoid getting this story. So some horses gallop into town. Just as the TARDIS sort of materialises out of shot. The Doctor's obviously got toothache. That came from the previous story, which was, I believe, the
Toymaker.
Yes, because they're wearing their Toymaker costumes initially.
Did you notice something?
That Jackie Lane looked a bit cold when she came out of the TARDIS, and you would have thought the Arizona area would have been quite warm. No, what?
No, it's when those horses were galloping through the studio. Suddenly they cut, and I was thinking they probably cut because they'd run into the scenery then, if they continued on any further.
Maybe so. I don't know. So they have to quickly get changed into some sort of Wild West outfits. Now, I do understand that the outfits they changed into were sort of stereotypical sort of outfits.
Yes. Ridiculous.
For ridiculousness purposes.
Well, that's the whole point, is that they're going by the stereotypes and the cliches, and then they confront reality for a brief moment, goes and confronts them.
Yes, I appreciate it. It is sort of fast, but never mind. I'll talk about my thoughts on that later on.
I just don't know why Captain Kirk, Bones, and Chekhov didn't wander into frame every once in a while.
Yes. Who did it first?
Doctor Who did.
There you go. Star Trek always copying Doctor Who somewhere along the line. Yes, original.
Although I believe they both used the 1957 movie as their starting point. Yeah. And it was historically inaccurate in the first place.
Yes. Well, I know that. I've read up the actual facts, not using Wikipedia, because obviously Wikipedia is not that reliable, Kirby. But anyway, moving on. So the Doctor has got a toothache, and he there's another doc in town who's opened up a dentist shop, conveniently for the Doctor and also conveniently for the plot.
I like the sign for dentist.
Which is?
A big molar. The big molar.
That's right, yes.
Well, seeing that I just had a root canal, I was not real happy to see all this dentist stuff.
Well, Kirby, aren't you glad that dentistry has come along so far?
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have liked to have a tooth distraction in those days, even with a slug of rattlesnake.
Which brings me to a point. You know, the doctor has a time machine. He can go anywhere in time and space.
Yeah, so he goes somewhere where there's no anesthetic for tooth extraction.
Right.
And where the dentistry is as primitive as it's ever been.
Yeah.
And no, also, it was more primitive, before. They at least would
I'm sure it was more primitive than that.
They would do tooth fillings and stuff.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
And they did have anesthetic. He said he would hit him over the head with the butt of the gun.
Yes. Not quite how it's meant to be done. Anyway, did you also notice when the doctor went in to see Doc Holliday that he had a hair out of place? No? See, that's how the story's so interesting. You notice sort of details like that. Also, he had a little, looked like a little cut on his head. Did you notice that? Or that was, in fact, his wig coming away from his forehead.
Yeah, probably that.
Hope he got that treated fairly quickly. There's a lot of scenes in saloons and bartenders ducking behind bars and stuff like that.
I won't give you locations.
Oh, I'm glad of that.
Locations, because it's all studio, but they kept shifting back and forth between Ealing and Television Center.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind, eh? I'm trying to find something that's actually happening here. Sorry?
I think so, yes.
The studio, TC6.
Oh, yeah, of course. No need to forget, because you can't, is the Linda Barron singing constantly during the
movie.
And then we get Peter Burris singing, which is actually more enjoyable, funny enough.
I can appreciate what they were doing with the song, and it is something that does pop up in it's something that does feature in some of the better known westerns. High Noon, and also the opening credits of
Cat Ballou.
And also the opening credits of El Dorado, which was made a couple of years after this. And the fact that they try to use it as a bit of a Greek chorus commenting on the story, but I appreciate that was what they were trying to do, but is the way it actually worked out? Not so much.
Of course, the other thing that, it's watching it now with subtitles is much better, because you don't have to have the worse than Nicola Bryant American accent. Which is so bad.
Some of the accents were not bad.
What? Yeah,
they were pretty bad.
And there's at least one American. Yeah, and there's at least one American in the cast.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was such a thing as Cockney.
Well, you could tell which one it was quite easily. Anyway, and also he went on to play lots of Americans in various British dramas. That chap.
Well, actually, he had been in America for a while and had just come back to England.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he went on to appear in Doctor Who again, I'm pretty sure.
I'm trying to remember which one.
I don't think he appeared in Doctor Who again.
He must have been in Blake 7 or something like that, because I've certainly seen him in some other stuff.
Well, Shane Rimmer, it was sort of one of those stock American actors, and to a certain extent still is one of the stock American actors in British productions.
Yeah.
He was in three different James Bond films in a period of about 10 years, for example.
Well, the guy who was genuinely a Western actor was John Alderson, though, who played Wyatt Earp. He'd been in things. He was a star of a 1957-58 show called Boots and Saddles.
Yeah.
And he was in Gunsmoke and all sorts of things.
I will say that nowadays that the BBC will get proper American actors to play American parts. For instance, John Goodman played a part in that, what's that drama about the black musical group and from the 30s? I can't remember what it was called now. Mel Smith was in it as well. Goodman was in that one. Occasionally you get the American actors and quite well-known ones actually appearing in British dramas.
As we saw recently in Doctor Who with Town Called Mercy, where they got Ben Browder in to play the sheriff.
Yeah.
Though I think if it's the major roles, they'll try to get the American actors in. If not, they'll, you know, stick whatever actor they can get who can do a decent American accent, or at least what passes for, at least in the British here, is a decent American accent.
Yes, indeed. But anyway, then, of course,
there were cowboys who were immigrants and would have actually had accents.
Oh, well, don't doubt that. But they wouldn't have had Dick Van Dyke American accents.
Yeah, you mean a
British version of Dick Van Dyke trying to do a Cockney accent flipped on its head. But you could, of course, call this payback for Mary Poppins. Hang on, the door's open. I need to shut it.
Well, as I understand it, many of the cowboy immigrants were from Scotland and Ireland and that, but there weren't too many British imports that went out west.
Nope.
Scotland and Ireland were British.
I think she's talking what we tend to think of being
English.
British. English, yeah.
Use the word then.
Well, hang on. What you're regarding as being English? English or Scottish or Welsh or Irish? Because you might upset some colloquialism people, I should say here, if you suggest that Welsh people are English. In fact, if you suggest even that English people aren't English, they're Scottish or Welsh. Yeah. It's all gone very quiet at that end.
I'm waiting for the revolt to happen.
As much as you would upset a Canadian for calling them American for having an American accent, or American sounding accent, I should say. Moving back to this wonderful episode of Doctor Who. So the Doctor ends up getting banged up because they think he's Doc Holliday, or some of the, although Wyatt Earp knows it isn't, but he's playing along with it, I think. I don't know why. He's a bit slimy, this Doc Holliday, because he's got Kate as his sort of floozy, and he tries it on a little bit with
into the microphone.
I don't know. He's trying it on a little bit with Dodo, who actually looks quite nice with a long wig. Actually, I thought it suited her better than the short 1960s haircut that she had originally.
This is the only story I've seen with her in it. So
is it really?
I don't know. Yeah,
this is my first seeing.
Have you seen War Machines, Kirby?
I'm pretty sure.
No. Or The Ark.
But she's not much in the War Machines, though, is she?
No.
The Ark is fantastic. So I think we have reviewed that once upon a time. I love The Ark.
No, it's not on. It's not on the list.
Apart from the security kitchen bit, that's what.
When The Ark comes around, I'll definitely vote for it. As far as I know, we have not in.
I don't remember doing The Ark either.
Yeah, we haven't done The Ark.
Anyway, episode two.
The Ark in Space.
Episode two ends with Stephen about to get hung.
You missed it.
I'm not interested in anything else, did I? Go on. If you found something interesting, we must talk about it.
It was interesting. when the doctor is in the dentist chair. And he's talking about not having any alcohol, and Doc Collo says, "Well, I do," taking a swig.
Oh yeah, okay.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah, well, I'm saying it's completely rubbish. It's Doctor Who, so it's still better than any other TV series on the television. But I'm comparing this to other Doctor Who. Moving back to the story, anyway. So yeah, Stephen's about to get hung, but the Doctor's got a period of time which to come out and reveal himself. Not in that way, Mary. Don't worry. very late in the story, Pa Clanson then turns up, and I don't know, it's all starting to brew up into a bit of a fight for some reason.
And many of these characters, either in reality, were either far away from here or dead.
Yeah.
And
some of them didn't even die at all, but died in the story. Like Warren, Warren Earp didn't die. Nor did Virgil. In fact, none of the Earps died during this period.
Charlie the barman eventually ended up in Paris as Professor Kerensky.
He did indeed. And Johnny Ringo, there he is, Johnny Ringo. What a nice character. Doesn't look anything like Distari. Distari?
Distari.
Yes. Distari. in this story. Bad anyway. Yeah, so...
And while we're talking about Doctor Who connections, Anthony Jacobs, who plays Doc Holliday, is the father of Matthew Jacobs, who wrote the 1996 Paul McGann TV movie.
Well, there you go.
While they were filming this, young Matthew Jacobs actually came and visited the set, and he talks about that, one of the Easter eggs on the TV movie DVD release.
That's good. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because that wouldn't have been a question in the quiz. But thanks for that. Can you remind me of that? I might pop that into. No, I won't. It's not interesting for my new book. Sorry, I'm compiling a new book at the moment. It's not a quiz book. It's a fact about a Doctor Who book, which I haven't found out whether I've got to elaborate on the facts or not. Yeah, sorry. Yes, carry on.
An interesting thing, when you're looking at the bar and there's that sign, no shooting.
Yes.
Behind the barman.
Yes.
That actually moves out of the way so they could stick a camera through there to take shots from certain angles.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, right. So one of the Clantons which is Finn is banged up now, and that eventually leads to the death of Warren, or the fatal injury of Warren, which didn't actually happen. Like I say, Warren went on to live for a few more years after that, and certainly wasn't shot when he died. So of course, this book, as far as this plot goes, because the interesting thing is this, when they wrote this, they wrote it for the British audience and were probably of the opinion that the British audience wouldn't have been particularly well educated and never would be. And certainly that no American viewers that knew any facts about the history of the story. And it's such a shame, because this is at a time when Doctor Who started to stop doing historics. Now, up to this point, the Doctor Who historics had actually tried to stick quite accurately to the history books, because they're educating children. Unfortunately, with this one, it was a semi-historic, wasn't it? Because they weren't
It was more of a parody, wasn't it?
It was a parody and a farce.
This
is often cited as one of the reasons why the historicals were kind of done away with. I mean, there's only two more after this. You get the Smugglers, and then the Highlanders ends up being the last one. That the ratings went down for this, and also I think one of these episodes, I'm trying to remember which one, when I was reading up on this, actually got the lowest audience appreciation index figure that Doctor Who has ever gotten in its now 50-year history.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the fourth episode of this story.
Which is odd, because I think I'll talk about that when we get to it, but. I think actually there's the fourth episode may well be the best of the bunch.
Yes.
The interesting thing is, right, for me personally, because I'll have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure I was born just before episode two aired. Now, it's fairly clear, I would imagine, at this stage that if we'd have been watching any television during that period of time, I would probably have been in front of it when this was on. And I would bet you, my mum probably won't remember, but I bet you my remarks at the time would have been, wah! And not much has changed since.
And still,
Because I've got a bit of a sore throat, I can't do the baby impression. sort of thing. So the Doctor is made a marshal. No, just calling it. All quiet there.
Deputy Sheriff.
And the other interesting thing, of course, he's offered a gun and says he doesn't do guns violence, which of course Tennant's Doctor sort of picked up on, but grabbed the gun fairly quickly at one part of the story, and so indeed did the 11th Doctor. So it's not quite true that the Doctor never does guns. He will do it when he needs to, when it's convenient for him to grab one. Certainly other Doctors, like the Third Doctor, grabbed all sorts of gadgets and aimed them at people. Basically all this kerfuffle is ending up to a shootout, which is quite interesting, actually. The way they depicted it in Doctor Who and in films is they're all quite a long way away from each other. But the OK Corral itself was quite a small place, and apparently the furthest anybody was from each other during the actual shootout was about 6 feet.
Yeah.
So,
and it turns out, I think, based on a documentary I watched a couple of years ago on the History Channel, the Discovery Channel here in the U.S., that the reason that the shooting ended up being the way it was is that the gun smoke, because everybody was so close to each other, was so thick, nobody could actually see each other to know where they were aiming.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, by the way,
when it's in this story, they have it at sunup. It was actually at 3 p.m.
And there's a lot of the killings in it are fairly cold-blooded. I mean, Doc Holliday, very cold-blooded, and of course, because it's cowboy, it wasn't frowned upon, but it was pretty horrible.
Johnny Ringo.
Yeah. Well, the thing that boggles my mind is they did the filming first. That was the way Doctor Who did. This was one of the first things. This was one of the first things, if not the first thing, they shot.
And yet, that's a good term to use in a.
If you'll pardon the pun. the unintended pun, I should say. This is so completely out of step, though, with the rest of the story and everything else going on in the story whatsoever. It feels the tone of it and even the way it's shot.
Well, you mean the actual shootout itself is yeah.
Yeah, yes. The actual shootout itself and the way it's staged, there's a starkness to it. They don't shy away from it. And the rest of the story constantly goes border, is always on the borderline between pastiche and parody. This is clearly, you know, doing it seriously. And I can't help but wonder why this is done the way it is.
You know,
also, why did they do the shootout part on film?
Probably because it was a lot easier to edit and you can do angles and stuff that you can't do or you have a difficult time doing with television cameras. I remember on the commentary for the Aztecs, something William Russell talks about with the fight scenes in that story is that fight scenes are really hard to do when you can't cut and you can't, you know, you can't make cuts and you're basically told, okay, you can do 4 edits in an episode.
Yeah.
You know, where you
can't really rely on the vision mixer either to,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, there's a point in which the story, made me think that the Doctor was trying to change history a little bit. Which contradicted his attitude in the Aztecs. There was something. That's just what one feeling I got at that one point where he didn't seem to be that bothered about his trying to not to interfere with the history of events in history. Sorry.
Well, this goes back to the point I made when we reviewed Genesis of the Daleks, which is at this point in the show's history, they're not keeping track of what we today call continuity. There wasn't a canon. Mm-hmm. Of things you couldn't, and they were basically...
No, they were wasn't really, is there?
Very, very funny, Kirby. Right then. Anyway, let's move on to... we can talk a bit more about this in a minute, but I'm going to just move on to my thoughts on this particular story.
That's the shortest amount of time going through
the
story.
Well, there's a surprise, isn't it?
Oh, anyway. Thank goodness.
Right. Now, it's because it's Doctor Who... It's not completely rubbish. There are some charming bits in it. Now, the things I like, and it's probably, I have to talk about things I like about it. William Hartnell does comedy brilliantly. His tone and performance in it. Peter Purvis, really, really good in this one. It's one of his best stories, I think, personally. Fair enough, the actors couldn't really do the American accents very well, and it was distracting from their performances, but they were very, very good. I think I can't think of anybody, even Jackie Lane, who played Dodo, I think they all did a really, really good job, you know, in their performances. Obviously, the story itself, you've got to understand that it didn't matter to the producers that they weren't quite, you know, getting the facts right, because that happens now, you know, with films. There's an event in the war that happened that was then depicted as an American submarine and said it was when it was really a completely different nation. And things like that, little facts like that get changed to just put a different angle on a story to dramatize it. You just change facts, don't you? And they often say that at the beginning of a drama, some characters have been changed or some action has been added in, but this is based on a true story. So you could say about this one, this is based on a true story, loosely. You don't really want to lie around too much worrying about the lack
TARDIS
of facts.
The TARDIS really came along to Tombstone.
You know what I mean. It's a story it got involved in. It's a true story, but it's not quite. It doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter that they're not entirely accurate with the thing. But one good thing about it is it because it is an interesting event. And it does stir you up to want to learn a bit more about the actual facts. And a lot of that with historical dramas and things stirs me up to look up facts on things like that. And that's what it did. You saw picture I posted on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group of the OK Corral as it looks now and Tombstone. Looking at it from space, it's a very blocky little town. And it looks like it's right in the middle of nowhere. And it's just fascinating looking at, because you can walk around the streets on Google Maps, can't you? And it's just fascinating walking around there. And it doesn't really... There's some areas that don't... Are there still the same buildings from 1881? And they're old traditional cowboy buildings. And it's fascinating looking at those, more so than the actual episode itself. But having said all that, this is utter crap. Right then. Kirby, your turn.
Who?
You.
Me?
Yeah.
It's not utter crap. It's not one of the best stories I've seen. It was very definitely one of the oddest Doctor Who stories I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'll go along with that.
I enjoyed parts of it.
So did I.
Even the song. When they ended. Even the song. Excuse me.
Sorry, Karen. Even the song. Yeah,
even the song didn't irritate me that much. I really enjoyed watching it with the info text because you may have noticed I put several info text screenshots out there.
Yeah.
One of which I thought was very interesting. They had an accurate sign for Joseph Glidden's barbed wire at one point, with the doctors walking towards the dentist office. Joseph Glidden was the inventor of barbed wire. He didn't really invent it. He patented it. But his home in the barbed wire company that is being advertised in that sign were in DeKalb, Illinois. And he gave part of his homestead for a university, which later became Northern Illinois University, which is where I first watched Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So I've just gone around a very Doctor Who-y way to...
Doctor Who-y, I do like that term, Doctor Who-y way.
To connect, this story with my own watching of Doctor Who.
Now, I just realised episode 3 would have been the first episode I saw. So amazing, watching that, why I would be a Doctor Who fan now.
Hey, no coconuts were harmed in the filming of this story.
Yeah, I know, yes. I did remember that. Yes. Right, have you done Kirby, sorry?
Yeah, okay. I can't really say much. Right, it wasn't utter crap, but it held my attention.
Yeah, it held my attention. I'll tell you, it's Doctor Who, so it's never the worst TV. You mean it's still the best TV programme on television, for comparing it with other Doctor Who. Certainly, Twin Dilemma is better than this. Matthew?
Well, I wouldn't say this is better than Twin Dilemma, but
I wouldn't either.
This was actually the first time I'd watched this story. I actually got this in 2007 when I purchased this as part of the End of the Universe VHS collection. And until a few days ago, it was still in the plastic wrap that it was sent in.
You watched this on VHS? You didn't watch it on DVD?
I watched this on VHS because the DVD is out of print now. And I went and looked. It was about $80. And I'm now, having seen it, get the feeling that that's just going to be one of those DVDs I'm just never going to have. But I mean, it's an odd story, really. I mean, I have the same problem with it that I did with Unicorn and the Wasp. By that, I mean that I found that the episode couldn't quite make up its mind whether it was a Agatha Christie pastiche or a parody. And this has, I think, the same problem with how it deals with the Western genre. As much as it changes facts about the historical events, I can't help but wonder why they even bothered going with it. I mean, if you look at the other Hartnell historicals, Reign of Terror in particular, they do a good job of sort of slotting the TARDIS crew into the actual events, condensing them where need be, but, you know, not just outright changing things, whereas this, as I said, can't quite make its mind up whether it's going to be a pastiche or a parody. And as I said earlier, I appreciate what they were trying to do with the song and trying to make it a kind of a Greek chorus. But it was overused, incredibly overused.
Yep.
And also the fact they were trying to use it to evoke the Western genre, which is fine when you're doing a 90-minute, two-hour film, but sticking it in, I think, 7 or 8 times in the space of 25
minutes.
That's
what she said. Sorry, carry on.
Oh, dear.
You're getting worse than Mary in the sort
of... Yes,
say
welcome to my world.
I'm sorry for you, Mary.
Innuendo.
I sympathize.
Accidental innuendo. Sorry, carry on, Roberts. God, I do apologize.
Matthew?
Yeah, carry on, Matthew.
I mean, the story has its moments. The gunfight in episode 4, for example, as I said, you know, the way it's presented and, in fact, the way it's shot is done very well. My feeling is if only the rest of the story had been as good as that was, and if I want to see science fiction takes on Westerns, I'll go watch Star Trek's Spectre of the Gun, or I'll go watch Living in Harmony from The Prisoner. I think of the Hartnell historicals, and keeping in mind I haven't heard The Smugglers or seen any of the reconstructions, I would think this is the worst of the Hartnell historicals.
I'd like to know what of which you know, dramatization of the events of the at the OK Corral is the most accurate.
You know, in some ways, I liked Spectre of the Gun less than this.
I think I
less. Oh.
Yeah.
Less.
Yeah.
Wow. That's probably one of the only glowing recommendations you'll get for this, the Gunfighters, you know.
I'm not terribly fond of third season Trek anyway, so.
Can you not carry on for a bit? I've just got to attend to a phone call.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I think Spectre of the Gun is one of the handful of third season original Trek episodes that's actually decent and worth watching.
Now, part of it, I really ought to go and watch it again. It's been, what, probably six or 7 years since the last time I watched it was when I got the DVD set of the enhanced version of those.
Oh, yeah, that's the one I got too.
And it's been a long time.
Same ones, Kirby.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I watched any of those. So, okay, I withdraw my statement and I'll wait until I actually watch that again.
I mean, I've been dipping in and out of the various Trek series on Netflix, and I think I watched it in Enterprise Incident not that long ago, so that's what made me think of it. But, you know, as I said, if you want a better, for that matter, I think that the Gunfighters is probably the reason why Doctor Who didn't do another Western for the better part of half a century.
Yeah.
Not including one of the new series adventure novels, Peacemaker, I think, with the 10th Doctor and Martha, which I haven't read. So I have no idea if that book's actually any good, but that's a Western as well. I was reading where somebody was saying actually this may have been the first time a Western was actually produced specifically for British television.
Yes,
and I have
it was.
To say, you know, if that was the case, then it was a very inauspicious start. It's just, you know, it's not very good. And for all the changes it makes to the actual events in the history, you wonder why they didn't just do a fictional story out of it, you know?
Well, I think they did do a fictional story because I just look at this as a parody. I don't look at this as them attempting to do anything very realistic.
Yeah. Well, as I said, there's times it feels like the gunfight, for example, and I think there's some moments throughout where it feels like, you know, the hanging, attempting to hang Stephen. It feels like it's trying to be a pastiche, a British pastiche of the American Western, and what genre is more American than the Western, arguably. But for the most part, it feels like they're trying to do a parody. And it's like Donald Cotton, who was writing the script, couldn't quite make up his mind which one he really wanted to do.
Well, you know, even though it was a parody, since it had Doc Holliday in it, it was also a paradox.
Very good, Kirby. Very good.
He was waiting to say
yes,
that. You know?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Hanging out.
Everything I have read, it's glowing in terms of the parody element. And that's all that they say, really, it is. And taking it in that way, it is an amazing parody. But you take it out of parody, and there's just nothing. I can't even imagine that it was made for an American audience.
It probably wasn't. I mean, we've talked about this on a certain other podcast as well.
What podcast would that be?
Stories from the Vortex, which you can find at storiesfromthevortex.blogspot.com. What we've talked about on there as well, that with some of the early Big Finish audios, that it's like clear that they weren't ever thinking that, you know, that an American audience was actually going to listen to anything. In the same way that, you know, Who wasn't sold to the United States until well into the 1970s. So I don't think, and even at this point, I think Canada had stopped buying them as well. So I don't, almost certainly weren't thinking of that.
There were a couple of pretty good DVD extras, including one about
documentary.
The documentary, The End of the Line, was pretty good. And Tomorrow's Times was excellent. It had Mary. Kirby. It had Mary Tam in it though.
Kirby.
Yeah, on the Tomorrow Times ones, they get somebody who's not from the particular era to host it and narrate it. So, you know, for obvious reasons, when you hear some of the reviews and some of the things that were being said at the time.
Right, I'm back. Kirby. Front and sides too.
And front and
front sides too.
Yeah.
Kirby.
Yeah, go on, Kirby. Sorry.
No, I'm done.
I was going to tell you something, Kirby.
Yes.
You listening? You know Donald Tosh, who they interviewed a lot in that.
No, I don't know him personally.
No. Well, he wrote to me.
Oh.
So I got a letter from him, yes.
Oh.
Right. Where do we get up to? Where are we up to? Is everything we did on there?
Well, we still have Robert and me.
All right, go on then. Who's next? Robert?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I quite like the humor in this. Hartnell does such a good job with comedy, and you could clearly see that he really enjoyed doing this story. And you know, I just appreciated some of the funny lines, you know, things like when he says, "He gave me a gun, he extracted my tooth. What more do you want?"
Yes.
But and also when Stephen's asked to find a tune to play, he says, "Let's hope the piano knows it." And you know, just little things like that I thought were the right kind of humor.
Oh,
but
it's dinner time in Robert's house.
Yeah.
No, my cup just slided off my plate. It's all right. Luckily there was nothing in it. But yeah, the humor sort of jars with the seriousness and of, you know, the situation of what's going on. It's like, you know, when they get dressed up and Simon says, "Oh, I always want to be a cowboy." And, you know, they start into their, you know, cowboy type routine. And then, you know, Stephen gets his gun shot out of his hand straight away, thereby showing, well, the Wild West isn't quite the romantic type of, cowboy thing that you're thinking of. You know, it's just like the humor sort of grates against that seriousness of what really went on and how, you know, harsh and bad things could get.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did appreciate the humor. And you know, you could see that, and you know, good cast, you could see that they enjoyed what they were doing. So, but you know, I just hate that ballad. It just grated. It just, you know, it was overused. How many times, you know, did they have it? It just didn't push the plot along. It did nothing. I mean, I did like the bit with they keep on asking Stephen to sing that song. He's reluctantly sort of singing along as he's got guns pointed at him. But I think the humor was the only thing that really had going for it. But, and something Kirby mentioned, you know, when he watched it with the infotext, is that this is one of those DVDs that sort of the extras, or, you know, watching with the infotext or the audio commentary makes it a lot better than it actually is. Because watching it just for the story itself isn't much.
No.
So that's my opinion.
Okay, Mary.
Well, I come to this story with a couple of prejudices anyway. I'm not fond of historical
westerns.
So it's one reason why the First Doctor's range is not one of my favorite ranges. But then I grew up with nothing but westerns on TV. It didn't matter what channel you turned to. My dad was always watching, you know, if it wasn't Gunsmoke, it was Johnny Rifle or Bat Masterson. You know, or Bonanza, everything was a Western then. So I'm so tired of Westerns. So to have to watch, and movies too. There were always Western movies out. So I was already.
True Grit.
Well, that was a later one. And I think it was not so much guns driven like, the older Westerns were. So it was like putting a hot poker to my eye trying to watch this. I tried to watch The Gunfighters once before because I had heard what a wonderful parody it was. So I tried to watch it 2 years ago or so, and couldn't even get through the first episode. So I wasn't too happy about having to watch it this time. And I would definitely, I would definitely put it below Twin Dilemma any day.
Yes.
Yeah, and in an effort to appreciate it, I did read.
Very likes Twin Dilemma.
I don't mind Twin Dilemma. Anyway, I tried reading. I've got a couple of, you know, Doctor Who books that review episodes and all that. And the writers were pretty united in what a wonderful parody this is. So I can appreciate it from, you know, that standpoint that it is a good parody of various Western forms and characters. But don't make me sit through this again.
No. So there we go then. Isn't it wonderful? That was... The Gunfighters.
Hello, I'm Colin Baker. You lucky people are listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, the best podcast on the pod.
There is a competition. I did a little competition on the...
yeah, I saw that.
And it doesn't matter that it says to Adam.
Even better if your name is Adam as well.
Yeah, well, there are ways you can actually remove that permanent marker pen from the picture, but if you so wish.
No, it was written by him.
It was.
Therefore, you keep it no matter what it says.
I'm not keeping it.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not keeping it. It's up for grabs.
Adam.
What?
He's saying.
Yeah.
Because it's written by Colin Baker.
And it's also original one-off photograph of him that nobody else has got because this is the only print.
Do you know why?
You mean why?
I've got an autograph of Patrick Troughton, but it says to Mark. I don't care that it says to Mark. Oh. At least it's an autograph of Patrick Troughton. There we go.
And
I've got a first edition of an ElfQuest book that was autographed by Wendy Pini, and it's got – she autographed it. She says to Kirby and to my current girlfriend at the time. I don't care.
Yeah. Right. Well, in the same way, I have a copy of Sophie Aldred's book, Ace, The Inside Story of the End of an Era, that I bought used off of Amazon. And it turned out the seller had no idea the thing was signed. So it's actually signed to Stephen. But I've never had the opportunity to get her to sign it for the current owner of the book. But it's signed, and that's what's important.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
It's up for grabs for the best bit of feedback we get this week. And for a moment there, I thought I was going to be singing, but fortunately, depending on which way you want to look at it, we've just about had enough feedback in to prevent me from doing that. Now, I did get a message.
Well, as long as you're not singing the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon,
no
I think
chance.
Everybody will be okay.
Yes.
No
chance. Yeah. Well, that's the one to really drive us over the edge.
I got a message on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group from Dinos Daniel, who says, Adam Pearson, you have feedback. If you have a TARDIS, do get Doc Holliday to rip out your tooth with pliers. No way. I did not mind the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon, unlike most others. It sets the scene well. The Gunfighters was an enjoyable watch considering its age. Thank you very much. It was made before I was born. Yeah, well, it was made before I was born as well, Dinos. Well, there you go. Thanks, Dinos. What else we got here? We've got Andy and Dawn Nunny, and he says, Adam, I've changed all the settings I can find, so let me tell me how this sounds. So, for some reason, he's a bit quiet. I think it's your microphone, Andy.
Yeah, get a new microphone.
Well, good afternoon, 20 megabytes, it's Andy Nunny here. I'm hoping that you can hear me better now. I've been through a prompt of every single one of the things I can find on this computer. I'm on the main desktop computer, not the laptop, so hopefully you can hear me better. Anyway, The Gunfighters, finished watching it this morning when I was finished yarning, I took him up in church. Safe to say it's not one of the classic stories. However, I do think it's unfair that it gets tarnished with the brush of being the poorest Doctor Who story ever. I think we saw that one about 3 weeks ago when we had that dreadful story that introduced Colin Baker. Now, actually, I think, as I said, it is undeserved. William Hartnell, I think, puts him on his best performance. He's his most doctorish. He's got all his mannerisms, his mums, and the hand movements. So if you've ever read interviews and discussions about him, he always said he knew how to keep his hands close to his face, close to his chest, so that the action would focus on him. I think this is Reese. He was an actor and probably shed some light on this as well.
So did
you actually see that, you know, he would hold his lapels, flutter his fingers, move his hands around his mouth, around his face, but he really was making sure that he became the centre of attention as the doctor. So he's certainly from the fall. Now, we had him calling a wider purpose warp. Now, never clear, was this actually a Billy Fluff that they had to stay? Was it done deliberately? Or has it got Stephen Taylor doing it part of the way through it and then changing it back? So again, was this a piece of comedy writing that just stuck, or was this accidentally done by Billy Fluff? Now, the cowboys themselves, I mean, really, they are caricatures. I know they're based on real-life characters, because they were the Wyatt, it was Wyatt Earp. Didn't they have brothers? Bat Masterson, of course, Doc Holliday. Clancy Brothers really could have been identikit cowboys. In a way, you got the intelligent one, you got the action one, you got the thick one, and you got the dad running in it. It's a bit like a violent version of the Waltons, really. Get out, John Boy! And that simple face of it. Also, you had characters like Charlie the Barman, who did get gunned down rather unfairly by Johnny Ringo for basically saying the wrong thing, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And
the story is
shooting. They shoot him down, and they listen to the bar, and they cover him up, and there's the Wyatt and the Batmaster and the Doctor with the hats off, and then that's it. It seems a bit sort of a bit cold. Now, there were some good moments in there when the Doctor first introduced themselves. You got Stephen Regret Taylor, you got Dodo being a pianist, and he's Dr. Caligari. Doctor Who? Exactly, yes. Now, is that the first time he plays himself as Doctor Who? I can't remember if this is before or after the War Machines. Of course, that's when he actually gets called Doctor Who. But again, I just think it shows that Hartnell was still in control of what he was doing. I know he was coming to anyone towards the end of his career as the Doctor. Anyone who's seen the Adventure in Space and Time will know what was happening. But I think that's one of the reasons why I think this is unfairly said as being one of the poorest Doctor Who stories ever. It's still got poor ratings. Hey, people have watched some right rubbish in their time, haven't they? Now, I think one of the big problems with this, though, is where was the plot going? I mean, they didn't really see anyone. The Doctor landed, he got toothache, and then they spent the time running around with people trying to kill him and not making a very good job of it, and him being locked up and getting away and becoming a deputy. So, yeah, Deputy Doc. That did make me chuckle. And then you come to the final shootout scene. And that's 2 points really occurred to me. One, how many bullets do these guns actually hold? I thought there were six shooters, so you got six bullets.
Yeah.
They have 100 shots in the first 10 seconds. And also, God, those cowboys, they are crap shots, aren't they? And they let fly with everything they got. And there was the Earp brothers and Doc Holliday just stand there looking at them, you know, not even getting too close. And it's quite funny, one of what they said, oh, let's separate, and one dies to cover behind a cartwheel that's going to give him about 2 inches of wood for cover. I mean, it really is. They're not very really bright, are they? And when they get gunned down, it seemed to take one shot from Holliday to kill off one of the brothers. Though it did take all three of them to kill the final one before he did his typical Lester would dive off the stairs. So, it's enjoyable. You know, I sat and watched it and did giggle at it a few times, didn't take it too seriously. I think that's the way you got to take it. It's not. It was meant to be not serious at all. It wasn't really a historical analysis of what had actually happened. And of course, the Wild West itself was so much romanticised, I can't imagine it really would be that good. I mean, certainly, I don't think Kate would have looked so glamorous as she did if she lived the life she did. I mean, she would probably have been, shall we say, a good time girl. I think we all know what we mean by that as well. But, yeah, it was there, it was enjoyable enough, and
it was there.
It's been worse, I know we better, so, I think that sums it up. Now, coming up to 5 minutes, I know I've been told I've been going on too long. And I know I've got to have a mug of Coke, I've been out for a walk, and it's been early day for a glass of wine. Anyway, hopefully this one will sound better, and be seeing you.
Andy Nunny there, and yes, it was sounding better. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a good one.
All right. And we have this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk.
Captain.
We have a saying in Yorkshire, I'm not as green as I'm cabbage looking, meaning I'm not as naive as I appear. We got that saying from the Rutans. The ballad of the LCS. LCS always reminds me of the Leeds Cooperative Society. It might be high noon for them as well. There was a spoof of Star Wars called Spaceballs. In that, the Empire could know the future because they had a VHS tape of the Spaceballs film. We do not know, but we might have something similar in that Stephen was forced to sing the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon several times. If it was the full version we hear later, then he has sung about what is about to happen. David Graham, who plays Charlie the barman, was the voice of Brains on Thunderbirds. He maintains his American accent, unlike some of the other actors. In the 1930s and 40s, singing cowboy films were common. Stephen is dressed as one, and we get the ballad repeatedly. This gets wearing after a while.
What, his clothes?
Yep.
No, really?
William Hartnell had his usual problem with his lines, due to a medical condition. It is not easy performing a script. Ask Michael Bay. There's no regard for historical accuracy. I'm pretty sure Ringo was not at the gunfight.
No, he's in the Beatles.
Has anyone written a Beatles quiz book?
Oh, very funny. Yes, I have.
Oh, doctor, I'm in trouble. My pulse begins to race. It goes boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom, booty, boom.
It is Gallifreyan Morse. Bye for now.
That was Ian Kirk. Thank you, Ian. Right, so what's the best bit of feedback then? What's the best bit of feedback then? The three of them. Hello, anybody there? Am I on my own?
Asking us to...
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
Who should get this wonderful little original photograph that I have in my hand here?
Me.
Oh, that's a tough one, because that was Andy's best feedback ever. And yes. Ian is always so funny and so faithful in his, it's hard to choose.
Should we flip a coin?
Yes, Robert, yes?
I've got a spare Colin Baker autograph if you want as well, you can use as well.
Have you?
Yes, I see so quite a few things for me. But, I mean, it will say to Robert.
Yes, don't worry. This is the prize. Like what we'll do,
It would be cheaper to send it to Ian, wouldn't it?
Right, okay. I'll do it fairly and randomly, because it was all very, very good. Don't you think?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Therefore, I shall try and do a random number selection between 1 and 3. And the order will, the numbers will be, the order in which I read them out. I think that's probably the best way. So... let's see if I can work out how to
you
do
this. You didn't read two of them. They were read
all
by
right, Mr. Respect. Pedantic. I'm going to read out their names. Right, so number one then will be Dinos. Number two then will be Andy. And number three will be Ian. So this is just about to generate the number three. The number three. So therefore, Ian will get the signed photograph.
Yay.
Of Colin Baker.
Yeah.
Well done. So Ian, if you could email me your address, then I'll send it to you. Yes, Kirby.
You were wondering if that was one of the first times when the Doctor Who joke occurred.
I wasn't.
I did a little research. And actually, it was in An Unearthly Child, first one.
It wasn't really a joke, though. In Unearthly, it was part of the story.
Yes, it's never a joke.
Anyway, right, so we have new members of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook
Lots
group.
Lots of new members.
And Ian, very kindly, as usual, sent us a message to say which was the last ones. But I can't remember what he said now. See if I can work it out.
You know, it would have been easier to find if someone hadn't been clicking like on 28 different messages.
I would never do that. I would never, never, never do that.
And welcoming everybody.
Right. And welcoming, yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, welcome people. Come on.
Adam, it's at the top. It should be at the top of the page. Right should underneath it? Your pinned post.
Well, I'm on a different page now. Oh, good grief. But was it not Mike Cusp? Because the plants. What I said about people having pronounceable names joining
last
the group.
Last week, Adam welcomed Sydney Hyde, Kevin Dixon,
yeah, and
Rachel
Lee.
Santiago, Hoovian Lee.
Right. Now, I hope I get this pronounced right. Mike Kaplinski? Kaplinski? With a C-Z-A-P-L-I-N-S-K-I. Anybody? I think it's Chaplinski, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but look.
Yes. Elise Fenstermacher. This is going around a joke, isn't it? Right. Elise Fenstermacher.
Saplinski, I'd say.
Saplinski.
She make windows?
Who?
Saplinski.
Fenstermacher means window maker.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kirby. Yeah. Ramona Time Lady. Shouldn't that say Ramona Time Lady? No, it says Ramona.
Ramona, yeah.
It says Ramona. Yeah. Ramona Time Lady. William Jeffrey Hunter. That's a bit more easier to pronounce. Oscar Ferguson, which is quite apt for this week, because obviously we just had the Oscars, with no Doctor Who connections, unfortunately. Or Isle of Wight connections, of course, a few years ago at the Oscars, when Anthony Minghella won his Oscar, he paid tribute to the Isle of Wight at the Oscars. But you lot missed that, didn't you? Yes, you did.
We did.
Jason Proctor. Valerie Joy Collins. Neil MacDonald. And Ben Ellis. So welcome, everybody. It's quite a lot of new members. We now have 328 members. Thank you. 328 members of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. And you can also join it where you get news and facts and notification that the podcast has been released and stuff like that. And also, you can send in feedback to 20mb.feedback. Oh, that's right. I got it right. 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. I don't know why I thought I got myself in a bit of a knot there, and I hadn't. I usually get myself in a knot, and I do. So that covers that part of the show. I'm sure there was something else I had to mention. Anybody? Was there something else I had to mention? Oh, it's gone very quiet again. You're not very helping me out this week, are you?
It's early.
Oh, by the way, I'm not.
Six in the morning.
Yeah, I'm not very well. Late. I've got a sore throat and a sore sinuses. So I'm not quite.
And we're not terribly enthusiastic about this week's story.
Well,
so.
that's not my blooming fault, is it?
We've got a better one next week.
Have we? Have we got, what's next week?
Next week.
Dalek invasion of Earth.
Oh, God, it's very long. It's good, but it's very
six
long.
It's six episodes, but it is good.
Yeah. So, I don't see any reason.
I do have an announcement to make related to Conca Cerberus.
Why we don't go on to your announcement?
Well, it was announced yesterday, but I guess I can announce it on the show now, that we're very pleased to announce that Gareth David Lloyd, perhaps best known to Who fans for playing Ianto Jones in Torchwood, will be joining us as a guest
in
June.
And in Doctor Who.
Wow.
He was in Doctor Who as well.
The series four finale.
He was indeed. So yeah, thank you for that. That's brilliant news.
So are we going to be able to interview him?
Hopefully.
Cool. Well, watch this space, eh? I don't see any reason why
live.
What do you mean live?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to try and do some of these interviews live, so you can join in, Adam.
Yeah, well, that would be nice. How about this week's episode of You Won't Get This One?
I won't.
I won't.
Neither will I.
It's funny, Matthew says, I won't, when he always does.
I've only seen this once, and I was less than enthusiastic while watching it.
This enthusiasm does not influence memory.
Phil agrees to disagree on that point.
Okay, well, we'll see, won't we? We'll see. So the first question will go to Kirby when I found the file that's got the questions on it, which is here on my iPad. Kirby.
Master.
What was the title of the first episode of The Gunfighters?
It's easy. A Holiday for the Doctor.
No, it was just A Holiday for the Doctor. That's easy. Was
yes,
not part of
was.
The
God.
Matthew.
Yes.
Where does the TARDIS materialise in Tombstone? So you were going to say Tombstone, weren't you? But no. Whereabouts within Tombstone does the TARDIS materialise?
It's a stable, isn't it?
No, it is. It's actually painted on the side of the thing it lands in.
Oh, no.
Anybody else?
Oh, that's sad.
That's what she said. But anybody else?
No.
The answer, and you didn't get that one.
I know that.
What?
Was it I know it was something like a... Because they said it was like a tailor's or something.
No,
I don't know. What
no, it was, like it was a livery and food store.
Livery.
Yes. All right, livery. For God's sake. Robert.
Speak English. You're in England.
Robert.
Robert. No, he's not. He's in the Isle of Wight.
Robert.
Yes, sir.
Right. What did the doctor think that here. Stephen and Dodo looked, or how Stephen and Dodo looked in their Wild West clothes? Or how
oh, God, because he says you look like somebody, although I can't remember the name.
He made a comment about what they looked like.
Yeah, he said, you look like a certain actor or whatever, maybe famous for Westerns.
No,
I don't know.
No, anybody?
Like Tim,
Tom Mix.
No, it wasn't. I didn't say in the question who did he look like. It says, what did the doctor think that Stephen Dodo looked like in their Wild West clothes? Not who, sorry, that might have misled you.
I remember what Kirby said. That's the one that I...
Yeah, that's what
not a singing cowboy?
No. The answer is absolutely absurd. Mary.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
What cowboy name did Stephen give himself?
Oh, I don't remember.
Anybody?
No idea.
The answer is Deadeye Steve. So after that round, you're doing really rubbish.
That's
a bit like the episode. Right. Kirby.
We're not doing very well, are we?
we all enjoyed it, didn't we?
Yeah, we
Kirby,
were all very much engaged.
What
in this
character
one.
Links Charlie the bartender to Thunderbirds?
Oh, that's easy.
Again, that's the wrong answer. I'll point deducted. Really. Got any points
deducted? What do you mean, what character?
Yeah.
He didn't even say it yet.
What character links Charlie the bartender to Thunderbirds? It's a straight question.
I know, anyway.
Hang on, it's Kirby's question.
Wait, you mean, are you talking actor? You keep saying character.
Character. Oh, yes, what character? It's quite plain in the question. What character links Charlie the bartender to Thunderbirds?
I know.
The actor, David Graham.
Yes, that's the actor. Goodness. But what character links them?
I have no idea.
Okay,
I saw Thunderbirds
Robert.
When I was very small.
Never mind that.
It's
Robert.
Brains.
No.
He was the voice of Brains. What?
I was thinking more Parker. Yes, my lady.
Well, he did the voice of Brains.
Yeah, I know, but it's more known for Parker. I'll give you a point for that, but he's more known for Parker, yes? Never mind. Right, Matthew.
That went completely over my head.
Well, I don't care, Matthew.
I haven't seen Thunderbirds in 10 years.
Never mind, Matthew.
I've been longer for me.
Yes.
How
I've
did the Doctor
it.
Introduce Stephen to Wyatt Earp's men?
No idea.
Anybody?
What was the question?
How
Stephen McGrath.
I'll give you a point for that, even though the full answer is Stephen Regret Tenor. How did the doctor introduce Stephen to what Earp's men? Anyway, good grief. Robert,
That's right. Yeah.
Robert, your question.
Yes, sir. Yep.
When the doctor goes off to get his tooth seen to, where does he arrange to meet Stephen and Dodo?
Oh, I know this.
Is that the last chance to learn? I don't know.
Not quite what he said in the script. You can, but as long as it doesn't interfere
up
with...
Up north,
yeah.
Where I used to live in Southend, and we used to have a pub called The Last Chance Tavern.
Did you?
Just out of interest. Okay. Yeah.
Go on in, Matthew.
And they played a particular song over and over again and drove all the customers away.
Yes.
Right. Matthew, you said you know the answer.
Well, I was waiting on everybody to shut up so I could have the chance to present said answer.
Yeah, go on then.
The answer is the hotel lounge.
Is the correct answer. Right.
Mary.
Oh, yeah.
What does Doc Holliday offer the doctor to drink as a substitute for an anaesthetic?
I know.
I think he gives him whiskey, right?
Not. I'd like to prefer what he says in the script. Go on then, Robert.
Snake oil?
No, the answer is a slug of rattlesnake. And after those rounds of questionings, in last place with no points is Mary. In a joint second place with 1 point each, Robert and Matthew. And in the lead with 3, it's Kirby. And this is Kirby's question.
Master?
Which Clanton brother had been killed by Doc Holliday?
The one that didn't exist, Reuben.
Correct. You didn't need to say the one that didn't exist bit, by the way. That didn't matter.
But it's true. There was no Reuben.
Yes, that's
Clinton.
True. It was indeed. Right. Matthew, this is your question. What is the doctor's drink of choice at the saloon?
No idea.
No, anybody?
What was the question?
What was the doctor's drink of choice at the saloon?
Milk.
Correct. Robert.
I should know because I love milk.
Robert.
Yes.
I do too.
What does Wyatt Earp call the doctor causing him irritation?
Can you repeat that?
What does Wyatt Earp call the doctor, causing him irritation?
I know.
Pop.
Correct. Mary.
That was my quote.
Yes.
What famous outlaw names does Kate drop when she talks about people she has known? Now you get a point for each here.
Wow. That means I was paying attention.
I know one of them.
No, I don't know.
Go on then, Robert.
Johnny Ringo.
That's one. Yeah, that's two more. Anybody?
Jesse James and Billy the Kid.
That'll do. Ah, so that's changed the score a little bit. In last place, with no points, it's Mary.
With no points.
In third place, with 3 points, it's Matthew. And joint leaders, with 5 points each, it's Robert and Kirby. And this is Kirby's question.
Master.
How long is the doctor given to come out or Stephen gets hanged?
I don't remember.
Does anybody know?
2 minutes.
Correct. Matthew.
Oh. Yes.
I lost my place. Oh, yeah. Who kills Charlie the bartender?
That would be Johnny Ringo.
That would be Johnny Ringo. Right, Robert.
The story.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
What does the doctor think is a disgusting habit?
Spitting?
Correct.
Oh.
Mary.
Hey, I missed that.
Yeah, I missed that too.
Because I remember he got spat at, I think. And then,
Mary.
Yeah.
Which character has a stutter?
Oh, I can hear him. He's one of the clans.
I don't know who that was, though. Yeah.
But I don't know which one.
Does anybody know which one?
Can I take a guess?
Yes, you can.
Was it Ike?
Nope, it was Finn. Right.
No.
Phineas and Ferb.
Kirby.
Master.
In real life, which of the Earps was killed during the year of the gunfight?
In real life?
I haven't the foggiest.
Well, you can guess. There's a few of them. I think it's worth a guess, surely.
Wyatt.
No. Anybody?
Virgil?
No, the answer is none of them. And I did allude to this earlier on in the thing.
That was not fair.
This is a trick question.
No, it wasn't. Right. Matthew.
Trick question.
Matthew.
Trick question, Adam.
What
trick
was
question.
The reward on the poster for the capture of Johnny Ringo?
Oh, I wish I'd taken notice of that.
$2,000?
Nope. Anybody?
$1,000?
It was, Mary. Well done.
Well done.
Right then, what time of day? Sorry, this is Robert's question. What time of day is the meeting at the OK Corral, incorrectly by the way, scheduled for?
It wasn't at.
I said it earlier.
I said 3 o'clock.
It's not 3 o'clock. Anybody?
Sunrise.
Correct. It was 3 o'clock in real life. But sunrise in the story.
They refer to it as sunup.
Yeah.
Sunup.
That'll do. Yeah.
Sunup, sunrise,
same blimmin' thing.
Difference. Sunrise,
right.
Sunset.
It's Mary's question now. And we move into a new round of... These are quite good fun, these questions. Right then. How old, Mary, is Peter Purvis? How old is he now? You get a point if you get it bang on, and you get 1 point if you get it a year either way. So how old is Peter Purvis now?
I know.
75?
Spot on.
Really?
Whoa. Okay. Whoa.
Right. I'm just guessing how old he was when he did the episode and added 50 years.
Right.
Well, that's one way of doing it. Yes.
Yeah. Kirby.
That's a very good way of doing it, Mary.
Kirby.
Master.
Maurice Good played Phineas Clanton, but is he dead or alive?
I haven't the foggiest.
Right, okay. So you're not going to have a guess, even though there's two possible answers.
Okay, he's alive.
Wrong. Anybody like to come up with that? Oh, dear. Well, no, nothing up for that one. The answer is he's dead. He died on the 10th of May 2013. Right then. Matthew.
Ah.
Yes.
How old is Jackie Lane?
71?
Nope. Anybody?
She's 72.
I'll give you a point for that, even though you would have got a point anyway, because she's actually 73. Robert. Shane Rimmer plays Seth Harper, but is he dead or alive?
Oh, God. I think he's still alive, actually, isn't he?
He is still alive.
And still acting. Mm.
So, he was one of the people on doing commentary, wasn't he?
Yeah. Also did the commentary and also did the audiobook of this that was released last year, apparently.
Richard Beale is
How do you know you didn't have a copy of this on DVD?
Well, because I remember, because I did Toby Hato moderate the commentary?
Yes, he did.
Seeing the photo at the time, I think, on his Facebook.
Never mind. Okay. Mary?
Wow.
Mary?
Yeah.
So we've established that Shane Rimmer is still alive. So how old do you reckon Shane Rimmer is?
Wow.
Ancient.
He'd be quite old.
I'm thinking 83.
Whoa! I'll give you a point for that. It was 80... I'm not telling you, actually. It's 80-something. So it could go either way for somebody to get the actual age.
I know.
For a point. Yes?
84.
Correct. Right. So after that round of questionizings, we have...
Getting on a bit.
What's getting on a bit? Well, the podcast.
I'm saying the actors.
In last place with 4 points is Mary. In third place with 5 points is Kirby. In second place... I keep saying that, don't I? Place with 7 points. It's Mary. And then Rob, Matthew, for God's sake! It's Matthew with 7 points. And then the lead with 11 points. It's Robert. Right.
But I'm not dead yet.
Right, before we move on to the more general knowledge side of Doctor Who, there's 3 more questions left. And this is Kirby's.
Master.
Bartender Charlie was played by David Rimmer. That's wrong. David, what's his name again, Robert?
Graham.
David Graham. Sorry, the spell checker obviously changed that. David Graham. But is he dead or alive?
I
know.
I'll say he's dead.
Nope.
No.
So I can't offer that one, I'm afraid. Sorry. He's not dead, Kirby.
He's true or
false
or great.
Alive. Matthew, the next question is yours.
Can I give you some interesting information?
No,
I was hoping that you were going to ask who he played in City of Death.
Never mind.
But no,
no, right.
No, that's an easy one. Then.
Right. Go on then quickly, Robert.
He's going to do the voice of Parker in the 2015 remake of Thunderbirds, the computer animated remake.
Good, excellent.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't. But thank you very much. Right. How old is David Graham then, Matthew?
Oh, God. I'm going to say 84.
Nope. Anybody?
Nope. Oh, I think it's 86.
No, the answer is 89.
Right. Oh, God.
Whoa, okay.
Right.
Wow, he's getting on a bit.
He is getting on a bit. Robert.
Yes, sir.
Victor Curran, or Corinne, however you want to pronounce it, played Virgil Earp. But is he dead or alive?
I'd say he's dead.
He is dead. He died in 1981. Oh. Right, so therefore...
That's... Didn't live very long then, did he?
Well, he might have been quite old to start off with. I suppose could have had some... something to do with it. Right, I've just got to make sure I don't pick up questions we asked last week, because that would be typical of me.
Speaking of City of Death, Ben and Adam spoke about City of Death.
Oh, yes, so we can put that on the thing, can't
I
we?
I want to put that one on, on the list so that all of us get to talk about that one.
Yes,
sorry, what were you talking about? Sorry.
We just all decided that we're going to allow the randomizer to pick up City of Death, even though
I'll be a bit suspicious, though, if it picked it up this week.
Huh?
I would be a bit suspicious, though, if it happened to pick it up this week, now you've just mentioned it.
No. Well, if everybody wants to do it, say, if everybody wants to do it, why not have just it be the choice that follows
Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Now we're going on to the more general knowledge.
Does everyone agree with that?
Yes, fine.
Yeah.
We move on.
Yeah,
agreed. The more general knowledge side of the thing, which is, Mary, you get the first more general knowledge side of the questions.
Would that be a Brigadier General?
Mary?
Yeah?
The Time Lords put a time loop around the lost fifth planet of Earth's solar system to trap which composite creature that fed on life itself?
You would.
Wow. Don't know.
Go on then, Matthew.
The Fendal.
Correct. Right, Kirby.
Master.
When River Song's... Thank you for that, Robert. When River Song slipped into a micro-explosive... Or, sorry, slipped a micro-explosive into Dorian Meldiver's drink...
Slipped into.
Be quiet. What did the then... Oh, God. Can I start that again? Because thanks to Robert, I made a right pig's ear of that one. Right. When a River Song slipped a micro-explosive into Dorian Moldovar's drink, what did she then offer him which would disarm it in exchange for a vortex manipulator, a Kirby?
I don't remember exactly what it was.
Oh, well,
and you're becoming a Cyberman again.
Oh, we'll have a... Well, I'll pause then. I might put the kettle on and have a cup of tea. But give me the answer, Matthew.
Her earrings?
No, afraid not. According to the card.
Afraid not?
Callisto Pulse.
Oh.
Which was in her earring.
Which was in her earring, yeah.
Oh,
it was
I'll give you one earring. Give you a point. Right, well, break there.
Welcome to the world of football mad Troy Brown, a typical 15-year-old with a loving family, a tight-knit group of friends, and a nice house in Cowes on the Isle of Wight. Materially, he has a comfortable life, but then no hormone-ridden, angst-filled teenager would ever describe their life as comfortable, and Troy was no exception. Plagued as he was, the whole world is against me complex, no girlfriend syndrome, and the pains of requited love or lust, and the usual hoard of teenage frustrations and obsessions. A privileged peek into his private, warts and all, 2003 diary reveals transformation of his boring, ordinary life as Troy tries to negotiate his many twists and turns in what was to become the most extraordinary year of his life. Fraught with family secrets, misunderstandings, dangerous liaisons, challenging adventures, shocking realities, and unexpected outcomes, interspersed with teenage insights into the state of the world, including war, crime, death and disease. As you travel with Troy on his one-year life-changing journey, you will undoubtedly laugh at the adolescent humour, cry at his misfortune, sympathise with his plights and empathise with his feelings as he works through his personal traumas and is forced to learn by his mistakes. Be warned, however, those of a sensitive disposition may also be shocked by some of the diary's content, possibly offended, but you are, after all, delving into the grimy mind of a pubescent youth. The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin by Adam Pearson, available as a paper book or as an ebook from Amazon and iTunes. And if you're interested in the sequel, From Troy to Man, Troy Brown resumes his diary. He is 17 and he desperately wants to leave home and start his life as a bachelor. He has just been dumped by his first proper girlfriend, and not because he has accidentally cheated on her twice during their relationship. She wants to play the field. Most of his friends have moved away from the island, and life out of school proves to be quite a challenge for him. Troy is forced to grow up because of his incredible ability to make mistakes. His mistakes, as usual, are of a sexual nature, and the consequences of unprotected sex begin to appear, seemingly out of thin air. Faced with fatherhood and separation from his children, Troy's attitude to life changes forever. His main concern isn't football anymore. It is how the hell is he going to be able to be a real father to his children, and how many children has he got? Of course, his life is full of the other problems associated with day-to-day life. Will he ever find a true love? Will he ever find a job that he is truly happy in? Can he solve a murder mystery? Can he avoid being murdered himself? Will he ever be able to be a true father to his children? All of these questions are answered in this book. If you thought that being a 15-year-old virgin was enough of a rollercoaster ride for Troy, read on. This year and a half of his life may leave you needing to ingest a large dose of motion pills. From Troy to Man is available as an ebook from Amazon and from iTunes. If you're a fan of quizzes and happened also to be a fan of the Beatles, why not buy The Beatles Quiz Book by Adam Pearson. It is available as an ebook from Amazon or from iTunes.
Come with me.
I can't.
I'm going to listen to the 20 megabyte podcast.
You come with me.
Me come with you?
Yes.
Me come with you.
What I really enjoyed about Gunfighters as well was
that it was over.
Yes.
Now, I thought Kate brought a couple of things to it.
Oh yes, she did.
Because I'm a co-administrator on the Zoe's Butt page.
Yeah, I noticed Zoe's butt is liking things now.
Yes. I wonder how that happened. I get messages from Facebook or emails that are entitled, "There is new activity in Zoe's butt," and things like that.
Something we were just talking about, the actor who played Virgil, Victor Caron, died young. He died at age 48.
Oh, there you go. Wow. He did die young.
Yeah, and Doctor Who was one of the very first things he did, apparently.
Wow.
A favorite detective series that I only got in at the very end of it years ago when it was on PBS in America is Inspector Morse. And
yes.
They've got all the episodes on Netflix now. So I had the delight of watching the very first Inspector Morse episode last night, which featured a grizzled Patrick Troughton.
One of his last roles before he died.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it was one of his very last roles he did before he died. And it's not quite all of them. It's only about half of them that are on streaming.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, because I've got the entire series buried at about numbers 200 and something on my Netflix DVD queue.
Anyway, back to the quiz. Now, if I remember rightly, it was Matthew's question last. Therefore, this must be Robert's question.
Oh, yes, sir. Yep. Is that a good one?
I don't know. What London landmark did Mr. Magpie ascend in The Idiot's Lantern? Wire's influence.
I don't know the name of that antenna. What's it called?
I know. Well, I know what it's called.
I don't know.
Okay, well, go on then, Robert. I mean, Matthew.
No, that's Matthew.
Well, it's climbed the antenna, which is atop Alexandra Palace, which was the BBC's earliest television studios, where they broadcast things live from, including later in 1953, the Quatermass Experiment. Mm.
The simple version of that answer, yes. Matthew, would have been Alexandra Palace.
Yeah, but the answer I gave is much more interesting.
That's for up some. For debate. Right.
For some.
Mary.
Except for Mary.
Who, any more points.
Yeah, except for Mary, who rips her hair out every time I mention James Bond in Quatermass, and I've done both this episode.
Mary.
Have you mentioned Big Finish yet? Yes, you have.
No. Right, Mary.
Yes.
What year did the real Titanic make a maiden voyage?
Nineteen thirteen.
I know.
Ooh, so close. Go on then, Matthew.
It's 1912.
Oh.
It is 1912. Bad luck, Mary. No, I'm going to give you a point for being a year out. That was very close. Kirby.
Master.
The Mox of Balhoun worked for Jalco and Jalco, but what was their profession?
Oh, God.
I know who he was, but I don't remember that at all.
Oh, me either.
Anybody?
What? This is something you don't know, Matthew?
There are limits even to my knowledge, Mr.
Well,
Parkinson.
The answer is solicitors. Right. And American words, that's lawyers, by the way, American language.
Yes, I did gather.
Okay, Matthew.
Yes.
Which famous building in New York did the Cult of Scaro and Mr. Diagoras use before completion as the base of their genetic experiments?
That would be the Empire State Building.
And that was a difficult one, wasn't it? Robert.
Yes, sir.
Right. Which renegade Time Lord injures the Sixth Doctor and triggers his regeneration?
That's the Rani.
I know.
It is the Rani, yes. Mary.
Time in the...
Yes. Make it easy.
What event inspired Susie Brooke to become an important space pioneer?
Oh, I know.
I can see you're talking about it. Don't remember, though.
Matthew, you said you knew?
Yeah, the destruction of Bowie Base 1.
Yes.
No, I'm afraid it wasn't. It was her grandmother's death.
In the destruction of Bowie Base 1.
But specifically, it was her grandmother's death. Not necessarily.
Because she died twice. She died two different times in two different time streams, sort of.
Yeah.
Right, Kirby.
Fair enough.
Kirby.
Master.
In The Forest of the Dead, or Forest of the Dead, without the in it, the two there's, well, you know what I mean. In Forest of the Dead, what name did the acronym CAL stand for?
The last library is the last
Charlotte's letter. Initials.
Yeah. Oh, but Charlotte. I can't remember what they were for the life of me.
Should really deduct a point from Robert for getting part of the answer.
That's not part of the answer.
Post.
Post the easiest part of the answer.
So does anybody know?
No.
The answer is Charlotte Abigail Lux.
Thanks for enlightening us.
Was that Kirby's question?
Yes, thanks for enlightening us. Right. Therefore,
This must be Matthew's question.
Presumably.
What was the name of the Mars base built in 2058 where the flood infiltrated Adelaide Brook through?
Easy!
Go on then, what was its name?
Bowie Base 1.
That's funny, it was. How'd you know that? Robert.
Yeah, yes, sir.
What was the name of the creatures who grew within human fat when people took their miracle weight?
Yeah.
It actually had, funny enough, a multiple choice answer, that one. Do you want to hear what the multiple choice answer was?
I can't believe that.
Give us the multiple
choice. Yes.
Haemivores, kinder, obviously adipose, and thals. There you go.
Wow.
Right, Mary, final question.
Yes.
The fifth Doctor story, Kinder, featured which of the following liverbirds? Sorry, I'll say that again so it's a bit more in English. Which of the following liverbirds? Would it be Neris Hughes, Molly Sugden, Pauline Collins, or Polly James?
I know.
Give me the first two again.
Neris Hughes, Molly Sugden, Pauline Collins, or Polly James?
Number one.
What, Neris Hughes?
Yes.
Is the correct answer.
Thank you.
And the final scores for this week, so you won't get this one. In last place, with 5 points, beg your pardon, was Kirby. In third place, with 7 points,
how'd that happen?
Mary.
Yeah.
Well,
yes.
Well, quite simply, didn't answer enough questions right. Kirby.
She's alive.
Second place with 15 points. It's Matthew. And then the winner this week with 16 points. It's Robert.
I demand a recount.
You would, Matthew. You would.
Oh, dear. Right. Therefore, this week's website that has a close connection with this podcast, that's, what is it, Mary? Mary's voice. Very voice went very masculine then.
Co.uk or do you want Lavazzi?
Well done. Well done indeed. Well, that's killing two birds with one stone. Yeah. Yes, whowon.co.uk have got some latest. What? Killing two birds with one stone. So we've got some new figures out, but unfortunately they're the 3.75 posable action figures. There's the 12th Doctor regenerated. There's the 11th Doctor new version. Assault Dalek. Imperial Guard Dalek and a Zygon.
Salt Dalek?
Yeah. It's a...
Do they have a Pepper Dalek as well?
Uh.
they're already Pepper Potts.
Yeah. I couldn't resist that.
And of course, you can get those from whoone.co.uk. And if you'd like to, you know, if you want Big Finish stuff on CD, you can get that from there as well. Like these items on pre-order: Companion Chronicles 8.10, which is a Stephen Taylor one. Companion Chronicles Starborn, which is I can't see who's on that one.
It's William Russell.
Oh. And The Crooked Man. Fourth Doctor.
Fourth story. Doctor and Leela.
Yep. Yes. And of course, you can now get Fourth Doctor head mug, if you like your Doctor mugs. You can get the Fourth Doctor head mugs. Yes.
Their heads.
So,
their brains.
With the Tenth Doctor. Sorry. Yeah, it's a Tenth Doctor.
Brains.
Or what Ben would say, Ben, the Tenth stroke 11th Doctor.
Goodness.
Can we not go through that again?
No, because it's funny and it winds you up. Right, so that's it then. Just to remind everybody what we're doing next week.
Oh, what are we doing next week?
The Dalek invasion of Earth. Yes.
Do not dump bodies in the river.
I'll try not to. And when are we recording? It's got to be Monday, isn't it?
Can we do Sunday?
I don't know.
Can we please do Sunday?
I'm sure I've got something on Sunday. Oh, no, I have. Yeah, Deb's doing a bridal show on Sunday. That might make it a bit tricky. Possibly. I don't know.
So are we doing...
We could try Sunday. No, I can't. I'm not available Sunday. Yeah, sorry, not available Sunday. I do apologise. It doesn't happen very often, but I'm not available this Sunday.
Happen very often.
No, I'm usually available. It's you lot that decide we're not doing it on Sundays.
Doesn't worry me.
Well, say Sunday for the time being. I'll just have to cancel my plans. Never mind.
Aww.
What time would it be?
Well, we'll probably be between... probably around 8 p.m. I reckon, where I am, 8 p.m. I mean, I couldn't do it any earlier than that.
So that would be for me.
That's the usual time we record. Now, how's that interfere with you guys doing your other podcast?
It doesn't.
We were planning on doing it later that evening, anyways. Yeah. So.
Matthew just got confused about Sunday evening meant.
Yes.
Now our. This means that we're going to continue to have this issue for a while until time changes in Britain.
Sunday
in March.
So we're saying that we will be doing it this coming Sunday if Adam can get out of his commitment.
No, I'll
and then we'll be doing it on...
What are you giving up, Adam, that you're so disappointed?
Is this something that can be moved?
Well, no. I wanted to watch live the... with Deb, it's one of the programs we like to watch live, the very last ever Dancing on Ice. But
what is more important, the podcast or
Dancing on Ice?
Clearly the podcast.
And time spent with his missus.
Never mind. Right?
Okay, so 8 o'clock British time on Sunday.
Yeah.
And see, that's good because it's a longer story that we're going to be discussing more than...
Yeah, well, just give me one less day to watch a longer story. That's the only thing. But okay, that's fine.
Well, wait, Matthew tends to sleep Sunday afternoons.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm here, I'm here. If I'm not here, do it without me.
That's what she said. Anyway.
That's what she said.
Therefore,
Matthew, this is Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just because it's my favorite Surviving Hartnell story doesn't mean I might not sleep through it.
Yellow.
Hold on. I just gave my review right there. I don't have to show up now.
Right.
Go out and buy a case of Mellow Yellow. And
anyway, thank you for listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Join us again next week for more stupidness. I mean, for more interesting Doctor Who stuff. Goodbye.
Bye-bye, Elton. Bye-bye.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
They paid for their sin, and they locked on the door. For the herbs, they was master, and they was the law. So beware, all you cowboys, who's yearning to sin. If the herbs is the lawman, you ain't gonna win.
The 20 Megabyte Podcast. 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.